I'm back. You're here with Dave and Faisal on 770 CHQR and More Than Money. One of the buckets we talk about, which is an important bucket, is legacy.
Yep.
And sort of the key to a good estate plan is your will. And so I run the legacy bucket for the most part on our team, and I do a lot of these meetings with people, and I'm astounded by a couple of things, Faisal. Maybe three things. One, how old wills are, so they haven't been updated.
Mm-hmm.
Two, how many just handwritten wills there are. And three, how many people actually don't have a will. So there's levels of problems here. But even when you have a will, right? So some people think it's, you know, I'm just going to save some costs. I'm just going to write a will. The problem is the will is about the gift that you want to leave behind. And sometimes ambiguity in a will can lead to more problems than anyone could anticipate.
It's funny because when you look at what's also part of a will, it's a legal document.
Right.
And yes, you can put a legal contract in handwritten notes and go from there. But I, you know, when you ask somebody, did you draw up your own paperwork for your house?
Yeah.
Oh, no, I used a lawyer. Why would you use a lawyer for that? Well, because it's a house.
Right.
Well, this is your estate. Isn't your estate more than your house?
Right.
Why would you not want a legal document? And I think that we should get legal advice on this and make sure it's drawn up properly.
Well, it's important because people think, like, it's mom and dad and two kids. And, you know, the spirit that mom and dad want is I just want the two kids to get it. Right? Just 50-50. That's it.
Yeah.
I just have to put that on paper, right? That's what I want. That's my wish.
Just write the words 50-50
to the kids.
And then to the kids and then sign off on and you're good. No, you can't do that.
You can't do that. Can't do it.
And it was an interesting case that came out.
Super interesting.
So when we read this case, it came to our attention about the definition of a word. One word.
Yep. And one that's pretty obvious, right? Everybody knows this word.
So let's talk about this word and what it really means from a legal perspective and how it got challenged.
Right.
And what came out of it. I think people will learn a lot from this and why the importance of making sure not only are you having a legal document, but you have a document that really means your true intentions.
Right. Who knew that the word home was so confusing?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
All right. Catherine Zhang's joining us again today, a regular contributor to our show. Catherine is associate at Welsh LLP. Catherine, welcome back.
Hi, Faisal. Hi, Dave. Thanks for having me.
Well, we're excited to have you on this one because, you know, we sort of gave a little preamble at the beginning there, and I mean, you do this for a living, but we're constantly surprised sort of see the state or lack of state of affairs and thinking that perhaps goes into wills. And as Faisal properly said, that these are legal documents and they're in place and designed to ensure that the gift, the spirit of what you want done upon your passing is actually executed effectively with the least amount of resistance, least amount of ambiguity, and least amount of fighting. So let's just talk a little bit about how important is clear wording in your estate planning.
It's so important. I mean, as you guys talked about the case that just came out of the Alberta Court of Appeal, mm-hmm. Hicklin and Hicklin, it talks about the importance of clarifying what your intentions are for the home. So in that case, the father in his will said the home is to go to his two kids and the residue of the estate being anything that did not include what he had specifically bequested in his will was to go to his brother. And there was a fight about whether home meant just the actual property, so the building and the land, or if it meant all of the contents in the home. And so, and often that is what people will fight about, is the personal assets that aren't really tangible and usually aren't specifically listed in the will. So absolutely being clear in what your intentions are is absolutely important.
Now, who knew, right, that you could fight over the word home? Again, I'm sure if you're driving listening to this morning, you think home, what, you know, the case you just laid out, it was pretty obvious to people, like in their own mind, whatever they were thinking was clear. But the point is...
Well, let's ask you, what did you think when you first read and heard the word home? Did you think of the stuff inside the home?
Land and structure.
Yeah, that's what I thought too.
Right. But clearly that's not everybody's interpretation.
That's not the case.
How far do we take this, Catherine? So so we agree now that boy, if we can't even necessarily agree that what we all think of it as home is what a home is, how far do you go? And how do you avoid maybe too much complexity?
Yeah, and I think that's really important, particularly when you're not leaving your assets just to one person. Generally speaking, I know our office, when we draft wills, we address personal property because that is often the nexus of where a lot of disputes come from. So how does that personal property get distributed? The other instance where it's really important to figure out is if you have a new spouse who's living in your house and you've got kids and you want to distribute the estate to your kids, you want to be very clear for all of the beneficiaries involved if your intention is to leave that home or house or primary residence to your spouse for their lifetime use. Are they going to be entitled to keep that personal property inside the house? Because often kids want to come in and take what memories they had of mom and dad growing up. And so absolutely that's something you should be putting your mind to. We generally also in will drafting tell clients if you know that there's a specific item in your estate that you know beneficiaries are going to be fighting about. So if it's jewelry, if it's a painting, if it's a family heirloom, take the time to make a list or name that specific piece of property in your will because the will becomes a legally binding document. If everything else is just stuff, have a very clear paragraph on, generally speaking, these are the people that I want to have my personal items, and they can, amongst all of them, agree or you know, come to some other satisfactory solution, maybe selling the items in order to distribute them.
Now, this case that we were talking about earlier kind of had a weird twist to it. So let me kind of confirm for me that this is the story behind it. So when the brother was under the understanding that the contents in the home goes to him, the child believed that it was the house and the contents included. It wasn't until a close friend of the deceased testified and said that according to their conversations, everything of the house and the contents was to go to the child. Did I catch that?
Yeah, that's correct. And so what happens if you end up going to court over a word like home is the court has to determine whether or not the will on the face of it is clear in what that word is supposed to mean. If the court decides that no, the wording in the will is not clear on its face, then the legislation in Alberta gives the court the ability to look at what we call extrinsic evidence. And extrinsic evidence includes statements from both, in this case, the deceased's best friend, but also testimony from the brother and the sisters and the drafting lawyer, for example, on what the testator intended at the time. Now, you're absolutely correct. In this situation, the case points out that the justice put more weight on the best friend's testimony, and that's, he references in the decision, a lot to do with the fact that the best friend didn't have a stake in receiving anything or receiving any property in this estate. And so from the court's perspective, his testimony was non-biased. It was reliable, and it. One of the things that the best friend had said is he had always intended, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, over time. So, right. Yeah.
So think about how much struggle, pain, you know, all this work you got to go through.
Yeah.
First of all, to take it to court.
Yep.
The Court of Queen's Bench made their decision. Then you have to appeal it.
Right.
Like all this process, if you just wrote down a bit more clear of home and everything in it goes to my kids,
right,
according to the friend,
right,
then it would have solved and saved thousands of dollars. Because your kids still go into court.
Like yeah.
Your intention was to give everything to your children, Dave,
right,
and then your children have to go to court to fight it, there's still court costs, there's still fees, there's still lawyers' bills and so on and so forth that you have to pay just to defend your position that you knew was the right decision to begin with.
Yeah. Yeah.
Catherine, can you actually ask for some reimbursement of those costs if you win?
Yes, the court is less likely now just to allow parties to go ahead and expense the litigation or any court applications on the estate. And so what they do now is there is an assessment on, okay, what was the reasonableness of the court application? Was the court application necessary? And one of the questions the courts do ask now are, was there anything about the testator's will that was ambiguously drafted or unclear that could that actually maybe did cause the litigation? Mm-hmm. And so in that instance, yes, the litigation, if the court finds that it was, you know, in part due to the testator, it would come out of the estate. But if there is an unreasonableness on one of the parties in bringing the application, yes, the successful party can ask to get a portion of their costs paid from the other party so that it's not affecting all of the beneficiaries.
Catherine, we have to leave it there. Thanks for your analysis and your input on this.
Anytime. Thanks, guys.
Been joined by Catherine Zhang, an associate at Walsh LLP. If we haven't convinced, or if you weren't convinced before, hopefully we've convinced you now that if there can be ambiguity over the word home, you probably should take some time to make sure that you've expressed accurately and as clearly as you possibly can.
But that could be with anything. Home, cottage,
no,
boat, whatever, like 100%. My car. Which,
yeah.
If you had three cars,
absolutely.
Which car are you talking about? Right?
I'm just talking about the big gift. Make sure, like, you got to put a little bit of thinking.
Be specific.
Yeah.
Draw it up properly,
yep,
with a lawyer. Yep. Get the proper advice. Make sure that a third party person can, if they read it. That's why you do this. You,
yeah,
read the wills.
Right.
And when you have that conversation, if it doesn't make sense to you, you bring it up.
Right.
So, and you have no.
I'm not a lawyer.
No vested interest in
no.
it. So if it can,
yep. And I'm not a lawyer. So I'm reading the interpretation.
If,
right?
It's simple for Popowich, it's simple for everybody. And that's how we should be doing it.
All right. On that note, for sure, let's remind everybody that we're going to be hosting an upcoming seminar here in which we're going to talk about, amongst other things, sort of the legacy bucket and where it fits in the big picture of bulletproofing your retirement.
Yeah, where there's a whole bunch of tax going in the event of your death. How do you actually profit and protect, and how do you minimize that tax bill? We'll be talking about that on Tuesday, July 23rd, 7 p.m. at the Four Points Sheraton Hotel. That's in the West Calgary. You need to reserve your seats. So give us a call, 966-8400. That's 966-8400. Or you can register online at morethanmoneyradio.com.
There can be big penalties if you overcontribute to a TFSA or RRSP. Stick around. We're going to talk about the rules and how to do that. You're on 770 CHQR and More Than Money.